Hey, it's episode 422 of the 343 podcast. Today is a recording of our live session, our first ever live session that went out on YouTube last Friday. We're going to try and do more of those once a month because people really were receptive to it. Our live studio audience there was making questions fly into the show. Benny was reading out the questions as they were coming in. I was responding to those questions on the fly. But Benny opens up first and foremost with asking me about my opinion about Landon Donovan's recent comments on youth soccer. Yes, Landon Donovan has been on this book marketing tour for a while. And yes, he has this podcast with his co-host, Tim Howard, of former U.S. men's national team stardom, especially with that game against Belgium where he stood on his head. But we have these two former pros, particularly Landon, making a lot of remarks about the youth soccer system, of which, I might add, he knows nothing about. Yes, you went through it as a player, just like so many people have gone through it as a player, just like so many people go through the education system as a student, but you come out the other side, even if you were exceptional at it, not knowing why things are the way that they are. Well, my rant on that is a little short-lived because then Benny had the audience questions flying in. A lot of good questions, mind you. Without further ado, let me just say, coaches go to 343coaching.com for coaching education. Parents go to 343masterclass.com for parent education. It's so, so crucial for you to be able to guide and mentor your kids in a much better way than your average Joe out there. You're going to give them a competitive advantage by joining the masterclass. And coaches, you are going to get a huge competitive advantage by joining the premium program of 343coaching.com. If you're not ready for the premium program, you got a free course waiting for you there to get to know us better, to get to understand what it is that we've accomplished a lot more. And lastly, if you're coaching in the 7-versus-7 environment, you go to 7v7coaching.com. All right, everybody, let's get into the show.
Gary, we are live, my friend.
Is that a fact?
That is a fact. If you're in the audience, and I know I saw some people waiting already, maybe drop a comment just to let us know you're here. This is our first time doing the live stream on this platform, so if there's any technical difficulties, we apologize in advance. Let's see if anybody can comment on just to ensure we're live here, Gary.
All right.
There it is. Nelfinio says, vamos, first comment. I like it.
You're going to have to send him a shirt now.
All right, Gary, should we hop straight? I think the best format would be our usual stuff, and then people want to chime in with comments, they can feel free, and then maybe the last 20, 30 minutes we can have a Q&A. People want to drop their comments in the chat.
Sounds good to me. Yeah, go for it, man.
Let's first start with Unfiltered Soccer, Gary, Landon Donovan and Tim Howard. I saw that you just posted on X. They recently published a clip, and it was Donovan basically saying he's watching his kids training, right? His kid is 6 or 7 years old, I think, maybe a little bit older. And what Donovan sees is they're working on building out of the back when they could be getting thousands of touches on the ball. And Donovan is basically saying you shouldn't be learning this stuff until you're 20 years old, 21 years old. So Gary, your response to that on X or on Twitter, you said case number 21 million of quote unquote, I just got to youth soccer and I know what's wrong and how to fix it. These dudes have no idea. Everything you see at the youth level is a downstream consequence of how the professional level is regulated. So let's start there, Gary.
What do you want to know?
I want to know, first of all, your thoughts on what Landon and Tim had to say.
Yeah, well, my initial reactions with these MLS guys, and look, people might take issue that, oh, Landon is retired, Tim Howard is retired, they have millions of dollars, they don't need MLS, they don't need anybody, and that they're not compromised. Well, that's not really true, because if you want to keep operating in this environment and you want to keep having high profile guests, which might be MLS players or MLS general managers or Don Garber, and have access and be good with the Galaxy, you know, which is where Landon played all this time. If you want to continue being in that circle, well, you have to play ball with the Monopoly and that circle. So my biggest beef, usually when they comment on youth soccer and paint youth soccer as the ultimate culprit as to why American soccer isn't great, is that you are distracting from the real issue. You're basically always blaming the youth system and saying that the narrative is, well, that's the beginning of the pipeline, guys. So if you don't have the beginning of the pipeline, the development pipeline, correct, then clearly that is going to translate into not having great professionals and great first teams and great national teams. Now, that sounds very rational because it is on the surface, Benny. It makes sense. And that's why everybody buys that hook, line, and sinker. The issue is that Landon and Tim Howard and these guys have never actually worked in the youth landscape, number one. Okay, so you don't have a feel for what are the incentives associated with people who work in the youth soccer landscape. And then secondly, you also don't get an appreciation, even if you do work in the youth soccer landscape, for what the real issue is until you are at the state of the art and you're pushing up against the boundary, right, to get to the higher and higher and higher levels. You don't see what it is that's keeping you from getting even better as a coach, getting even better as a player, getting even better as a club, as a soccer organization. You don't feel that because you don't have any experience in it. And so it's really annoying because these ex-national team stars here in the States have the pedigree associated with their brand, and they're propped up by the monopoly. So they have credibility in the eyes of the general fan base, in the eyes of general parents, in the eyes of the general youth and soccer landscape, period. And it really sucks. So that's why I'm so annoyed, Ben. And that's why I said what I had to say, which is also separately. And you get this all the time as a coach, Ben. You get parents over the years who come up to you and they have opinions, which is great. Everybody has a right to their opinion, but they're so convinced that they now know what the issues are and how to fix them. And I'm like, bro, first off, not to go ad hominem or anything, but some parents haven't even kicked a ball. And then they're coming out and saying, we know, you know, what's wrong and how to fix it. Some parents have never even coached a day in their life, and that we know what's wrong and how to fix it. After just two seasons ever in soccer, or after three seasons ever in soccer. So that's what's annoying. That's why I said what I had to say. I hope that a lot of folks, at least I know our audience, generally speaking, isn't going to be looking to Landon Donovan and saying, oh yeah, he's got it right.
Yeah. Gary, what value do these former U.S. men's national team players, what can they offer, right? Somebody commented like, oh, Gary, you have a problem with a former U.S. men's national team coming out and critiquing the national team or critiquing the coach. So what insights can these guys actually offer to where it's like, oh, wow, what these guys are saying, yeah, it's true. You need to implement this.
Yeah. Well, you can talk about your experiences as a player, your anecdotal experience, personal experience as a player. How does it feel to play soccer in MLS? How does it feel to play soccer in Europe, which both of these guys in this particular case have that experience? What is the differences as a player between here and over there? What is the competition like as a player? What's it like playing in a World Cup, really? How is that different? You know, what's it like playing for Bruce Arena versus Coach B versus Coach C versus Coach X that you've had over the course of your career? What are the differences there? What did you learn, you know, from all those experiences? From whether it be a tactical thing, whether it be a technical thing, a mental thing. I know, Landon obviously is making the rounds, you know, pitching his book at this point too. And a lot of it, I presume, deals with off the field subject matter like mental health and stuff like that. Great. All that stuff I think is very valuable. Put that stuff out there into the real world. But if you want to switch context altogether and start giving your opinions about coaching, youth soccer coaching, youth soccer player development, youth soccer ecosystem, the entire ecosystem as a whole, representing professional players, you know, on and on and on, and things that they are in the same sort of market segment, because obviously they're not in rocket science. They're not in medicine. They're not in law. They're in the ecosystem that is soccer, but these are all extremely different specialties and require different domain expertise in all of these sorts of things. So don't think that because you have expertise in one area, that that can translate into another area. I was never a professional soccer player. I never played World Cups, but you don't see me coming out and saying, oh, this is, you know, how like, if I were a player, you know, I'd be playing like this, you know, against Belgium in a World Cup quarterfinal. You're not going to see me talk about my experiences as a player in a World Cup or as a player in MLS. You aren't going to see me do that because I was never there.
Yeah.
So that's the value they can bring, I think, Ben.
Got it. Kaiju Sports Club 5440. Good comment here. Let me pull it up on the screen for everybody. Shouldn't Landon's kids get thousands of touches at home? I remember the story of Landon always dribbling the ball, like on the way to school. And Gary, this is actually something that we just talked about in, I think, two episodes ago. The majority of the team training sessions, you should be working on team development, right? Anything that's individual, where's the time and place for that? You should be getting thousands and thousands of touches on your own at home. So Kaiju Sports Club, great comment, yeah?
No, that's exactly the philosophy to have, especially here in the American soccer ecosystem. You get your technical stuff, you get your individual touches, you get your repetitions, you get all that individual thing outside of the team training environment. Team training environment is for team training and is for developing team understanding for the youth soccer players. And it depends on what age. Yes, as the ages increase, more so, right? The lower the level, the lower the ages, okay, throw in more of these sort of technique-oriented sort of concepts, if you will. But, you know, the other comment he made, which I now remember you said about, oh, you can teach building out of the back when you're 21 years old. Again, he doesn't have any experience. He doesn't understand how difficult it is for the players and then and for the team as a collective to integrate building out of the back if you have never actually learned how to play football and build out of the back in your youth. If you haven't been doing this stuff, and then all of a sudden you're 17, 18, 20 years old, and you want to try to do it, can you do it? Sure. But can you do it at a very high level? No, you can't. You're so far behind. They think it's simple. It's not so simple. I'll give you an example, Benny. Have you ever had the experience of just being, because you played, I played, right? And you go to the stadium or you watch on TV and you see Barcelona build out of the back and whatever. Piqué gets the ball, receives, or Ronald Araujo gets the ball, receives, and then, you know, he looks and he connects a pass. Have you ever had the experience of like, I could do that? Like, I could just put me on, coach, you know, put me on the Champions League game. I'll receive that pass that Piqué just got and I'll connect it to, you know, my outside back. No problem. Oh, you want me to do a diagonal ball like Piqué did that 40 yarder? No problem. Why? Because I was able to do it at a low level. Okay. And it's a completely different animal to be able to do those sorts of basic looking things at the highest levels. Not to mention that if the other team identifies that you actually aren't a good player, you're not going to be afforded the time and space that BK is afforded. They're going to come and press you because you'll fuck it up.
Yep, 100%, Gary. Gary, I prepared a bunch of stuff, but I'm going to keep just going off of the comments of what people are saying. We want to hear from you guys. Potter's Vessel, 9408, he says, in the MLS Academy system now, it's all a train wreck. Just got back from J.A. Cup. The foreign teams play as a team. The U.S. teams are always trying to get hyped up highlights for their social media.
Yeah, this is true. And the naysayers, look, let me preface this to try to get some street cred for anybody who is new to us. We've been there and done that. Okay. Brian and myself right there by his side have been at the highest youth levels in the United States at GA Cup, at all these sorts of tournaments where you're playing against the Europeans, you're playing against the South Americans. We played against Flamengo and Palmeiras and River Plate, and we played against Ajax and Barcelona and Manchester City. And we've done all that. We've seen all that. We've competed with them. We've even beat them on occasions. And for decades, Benny, youth soccer teams here in the States, the highest level ones, have had on the score sheet success with international academies and European teams. It's always been there. It has always been there. In the Nike friendlies, which people might recall, might not recall, our youth national teams would compete and even beat Brazil on occasion and beat, you know, Portugal on occasion. So just because there's superficial score lines that look good doesn't mean we're developing players or getting better. So whoever made this comment, Potter, right? I think it is spot on. Yeah. They're actually developing teams. They're actually developing players over there, and we're not.
Yeah, 100% agree. Just a quick little story, too. I just watched my brother, Danny, his team went to go play at Mick Cup, and he sent me the live scan. I think they were in the quarterfinal, Gary. And obviously, Danny has been born and bred in the 3-4-3 philosophy and methodology. So you could see that his team was trying to build out of the back and maintain possession. But then you look at the other team, a team from Spain, Gary, and they're just levels ahead in terms of the way that they move off the ball, their positioning, their gamesmanship. Gary, before the game, Danny's team is like lined up ready for the kickoff. And all of a sudden, the team from Spain, they walk into Danny's team's half, line up for a team picture, and then they make the refs have Danny's team move to theirs. So just little like gamesmanship like that, where you can just tell like, bro, this team is legit, dude. And look, Danny has a great team, but when you're putting them against a top team from Spain, it's night and day, the difference. So sorry about that, Danny.
No, and Mick Cup also isn't what it used to be. I don't know if you're aware of that, Benny. You know, when Paul Walker, you know, who runs now called TFA, it used to be called Barcelona USA, when he, together with Brian, my brother, started the academy there at U9, U10, U11, U12, nobody was going to Mick Cup. And Mick Cup was essentially the preeminent European tournament back in those days, whatever it was, 10 years ago, let's say it was. Actually, it was more than 10 years ago, maybe like 14 years ago. I just want to say, you know, props to Paul Walker, to Brian. They carved the path and now everybody goes there. And just like Dallas Cup, it has lost a lot of prestige over the course of time. The big European teams, by and large, don't go to Mick Cup anymore.
Yeah. No, Gary, everybody goes to Mick Cup now. There's local teams. There's local clubs in this area. I'm not going to drop their name, but they were there. And I'm like, what are you guys doing there, man? Listen, granted, it's a great experience for the kids. Mm-hmm. It's awesome for the parents to be able to go and see the level. But like you said, it's definitely been watered down over the year. All right, Gary. Josh Stout, he says, the best thing MLS could do for youth soccer and their pipeline, build a smaller full-size soccer sport court a year near a school or walkable community. Donate free of charge to the city. They should be doing that once a year. Is that going to help anything, Gary? What do you think?
I mean, more soccer is always good. You know, just like I say that, hey, kids, if you're juggling and learning how to juggle 1,000 times and do tricks juggling, that's good. You're getting more touches on the ball. You're getting feel for the ball. But is that going to make you a better soccer player? Like, really, really? No, not really, because those techniques, those skills and tricks aren't directly translatable to the game, unlike other things that are. So this is the same sort of thing. Cool. It'd be nice to have more youth soccer facilities that are free of charge. And, you know, people can just show up and play and kids can play freely and, you know, no strings attached. Will that transform American soccer into what we think it should be? Absolutely not, because we still have a closed ecosystem. And in fact, it's not a bad idea for MLS to do, simply for brand building and continuing to reinforce their monopoly, right? Because this looks like a gesture of goodwill. And then when I come out or others come out who see MLS for what it actually is and start speaking ill of them or saying it needs to change drastically, it needs to be disrupted or dismantled even, then we're going to have less people listening to us. Because, oh, well, Gary, MLS is amazing. Look, they built a free facility next to us. My kid gets to go there, you know, free of charge and play pickup and all of that. So it's a good idea. Will it help? Sure. Does it revolutionize things? Absolutely not. In fact, it might hurt because it'll reinforce the monopoly.
True. I think about 2 years ago, Gary, on one of our episodes, you kind of called me out because I had told you, oh, look, like, yeah, actually MLS does care about spreading the game and helping out communities. Look at my dad's school. LAFC just built a court right there, you know? And your response to me was, MLS does not care about the future of kids and the future of soccer. They care about maintaining power, maintaining control. And the reason that they build those courts is so that they look good and that they can come out and make a post that says, hey, look at what we did for the community of LA. But it's not about helping the kids, right, Gary? It's about maintaining power and control and optics, basically.
Yeah, man. Brand building. You think MLS is going to be, MLS emblems are going to be sprayed all over those facilities.
Yep, 100%. All right, Gary, let's go with Gubs97. How do you feel about coaches or players saying that they don't fit the system. They are pros and should have the knowledge and skill to be able to play in any systems.
That's it's a great question. It's just not true. Every player can't fit in every system. I think the most obvious, familiar name that I can use is maybe like Busquets. Okay. Busquets is a slow moving, non-athletic, you know, defensive mid, a six. And he fits beautifully in Barcelona style of play, possession-based play, because his team owns the ball and he doesn't have to be scrambling to defend constantly, or, you know, having aerial duels back and forth, or bone crunching tackles or 50-50s. None of that. When his team owns possession, he is the greatest in the world. If he goes to a team that does not own possession and he barely touches the ball, and his role is to defend and be like a Weston McKinney type or something, you are going to look like ass. So every player profile fits in certain systems. There's very few players who are so versatile, so polyfunctional, that you can slot them into any team and they'll do great. Another classic example, if people recall, is when Andrea Pirlo, world-class, exquisite, silky midfield maestro, Italian, World Cup champion, came to MLS in his twilight years. You know, obviously it's a retirement league here. Goes to New York City FC, sucks ass, can't do anything. You see him spraying, you know, those balls, those beautiful filtered balls and long balls and angled diagonals and stuff like this. On New York City FC, they would go to the middle of nowhere. They would go out of bounds. It would go, you know, not to people's feet, but it's misleading. It's because his teammates and the system that he was put in is not conducive. They don't understand that level. It's not conducive to what he brings to the table. So he was asked, and so many top tier players came to MLS and look like shit, okay, because of the same reasons.
Yeah. Did you see that clip, Gary, of Messi in his last game with Inter Miami? And he sprays a diagonal ball into where Jordi Alba would have been running. And the caption was like, oh, yeah, Messi saw the ghost of Jordi Alba, but now nobody else makes those. I thought that was funny. But Gary, you talked about players not being able to fit into different systems. What about a coach? Shouldn't a coach be able to adapt his philosophy or methodology to the players that he has?
It's a great question too, because I view it in the same sort of category as nature versus nurture. Okay. So should a coach adapt to whatever roster he has and change the way that the coach trains teams and develop everything? Or should the players get adapted to the coach's system? So in that latter case, if a coach comes in at the pro level and the players that he has can't adapt to what the coach's vision is, then what happens? Well, at the pro level, you start getting rid of the ones that can't adapt, and you start, you know, purchasing players that can adapt, that you, the coach, specifically identify and recruit and bring over to the team. So I think the top managers in the world, actually, I shouldn't say that. I should be careful. A lot of great managers, exhibit A, Pep Guardiola, do precisely what I just described, okay? Exhibit B, maybe like a Carlo Ancelotti, and I'm going to be humble here because I don't know these. They're operating at a level way beyond me, okay? So I'm just giving you an educated guess from my experiences. And Carlo Ancelotti seems to be in a different light, okay? He seems to adapt to whatever his roster is. So he's now at Brazil. He's not trying to play the same way as, you know, he did at Real Madrid. And when he goes to Real Madrid, from all accounts that I've heard or read or listened to him himself, from all accounts, it seems like he's more of a man manager than like an intricate tactician like Luis Enrique or like Pep Guardiola, where it's all positional play. You have to be either on this side of the microphone or on this side of the microphone on these certain scenario, gain context. Now, Carlo Ancelotti is just managing player emotions and player egos and, you know, trying to optimize the team that way. So I guess to ultimately answer your question, Benny, I don't know. I fall more on the camp of a coach has a certain specialty, usually, in a certain type of way, a certain methodology, a certain way of playing generally. And if you veer away from what you know, you're going to be a disaster. So if Pep Guardiola wanted to all of a sudden play like Stoke City, you know, or play like the English national team or something like that, he's going to fail because he doesn't know how to train a team to play that way.
100%, Gary. And I think at the pro level, the pro game, you obviously have more leeway because what you just said, right? If a player doesn't fit into your system, you send them out on transfer, you get rid of them. But at the youth game, Gary, especially at the lower levels, when you're first forming a team, you're kind of stuck with the players that you have, right? Obviously, season after season, you can go and recruit and get new players. But in the early stages of your team development, you're kind of stuck with the guys that you have, right?
Yeah. But again, you have an added element is that one of your functions is to develop players. And our philosophy and our very strong opinion, my very strong opinion, is that the way to best develop players is a possession-based system, building out of the back and stuff. So even if I don't have the players currently to execute that to the level that I want it to, I'm still going to train them in that method. Because it helps them and ultimately it will help the team and ultimately it'll lead to wins and ultimately that helps me and we get on a virtuous cycle and by the end of the season, we swap out players again. Okay, the players who aren't meant for this, cool. You know, you try to help them find another team and you get players that are going to elevate your roster. So I don't deviate. I don't think, at least the people who believe in this sort of way of training and developing themselves or players or teams, I don't think they should change. Barring some exceptions, for instance, if you come up against a way more powerful roster, Benny, cool. Look at that as an opportunity to maybe teach your kids and teach yourself how to bunker and counter, right? Or how to do something completely different. That's no issue whatsoever. But generally, don't do that, man. Play the right way.
Yeah. All right, Gary, going back to the Donovan comments here. This was kind of a late comment, but Kaju Sports Club again, he says, you can see the fear in MLS players who have to build out for the first time. For little kids raised on it, it's just what you do. Have you noticed that, Gary? MLS players being uncomfortable in build out?
Yeah, it's very subtle, though. It's very subtle. I don't know if you had to have played, but I like to think you had to have played because if you haven't played, it's hard to get into the mind of a player if you haven't played. Benny. So when you have played and you have had certain experiences, like being under pressure and panicking, I know what that feels like. You know what that feels like. Every player knows what that feels like. And you know what ends up happening to your body. And you know what ends up happening to your first touch and your second touch. And you know what ends up happening to the subsequent pass or what it is that you're doing. And so when you're now observing a match, as a spectator, and you see in this context, like an MLS player trying to build out and is under a little bit of pressure, you see the body language throughout the whole interaction, and you instantly recognize it. Ah, that fool's uncomfortable as F, right? You like, because you've experienced it and you've seen it. You've seen the pattern a million times. And then if you look at the Europeans, the top players, for instance, they're under pressure, and you also as a player know what it's like to be pressured, but you know you're superior, because I played against inferior players, inferior teams, and I'm like, oh, you think you're going to pressure me? Okay, come on, dude. You know how that feels, and you're so relaxed, and you just skip out of it like nothing. So you can recognize that now as a spectator. But yeah, they're right. They are right. The MLS players, by and large, it's shaky, kind of panic central.
100%, dude. You get nervous when, if you're a supporter of a franchise and your team's doing a goal kick, every time there's a goal kick, you're getting nervous because your guys might fuck up. All right, Gary, let's go. Let's talk a little bit of the national team, if you don't mind. I'm going to start with a really short comment, but I think you're going to like this one, Gary. Yippity Skippity from YouTube commented on our video. The coach, and he's referring to the national team coach of the U.S., the coach should be American. What are your thoughts on that, Gary?
I have a lot of thoughts because I just know I've seen this commentary forever. I know where it's coming from. It's just nonsense. You want practitioners from the top cultures in the land to bring their culture here, to bring their expertise here, and to teach our people here. That is what you want when you are a developing soccer nation that, for me to be hyperbolic for a second, if you'll allow me, that doesn't know what the F they're doing. So why on earth would you want somebody from the inferior culture that doesn't know what the F it's doing, being the leader of the biggest team in the land? And culture is dry. It comes, flows down from the top too. They set the pace. They set the tone, Benny. They're the example that you're setting for the rest of the country. They're setting the example for teams in MLS, players in MLS. They're setting the example for teams and players in USL, all the way down to the youth levels. Why on earth would you have somebody that's not top of the pile leading that charge? And I'll make a further comment, because a lot of people come at it from this angle. Oh, well, Gary, every team that's ever won the World Cup did it with a manager from their own country. What, guy, self-fulfilling prophecy. Hello, the best countries in the world don't need to import talent to help them develop their infrastructure, their team, or anything. The best countries in the world have the best managers in the world, the best culture in the world. Of course, they're going to have their own people in charge.
Well, Gary, let's hop straight into another comment, which ties into this one. And this one is just an hour ago. Sam, hi. It's a little bit long, guys, so just bear with me. And Gary, if you want to stop me at any point, feel free. How you guys treat Pochettino versus how you treated Greg Berhalter and Bruce is vastly different. When Poch makes decisions, it seems like you don't criticize them because there must be something he's trying to do that we don't understand. We have to assume we know what he's doing here. If this is the case, what's the point in even having this show? Is there only one way for you to judge Poch, and that is by his performances in the World Cup? I don't recall Berhalter or Bruce making decisions in friendlies / meaningless tournaments in the past, and you extending that same grace toward them. All we can do is analyze and criticize the games and information we have in front of us. I wish you and Benny would do more of this. You, and mainly Brian, have been able to objectively analyze past friendlies, lineups, player selections, and press conferences. But for some reason under Poch, every podcast between you two turns into the American media / fans are so dumb and don't see what Pochettino is doing. Maybe you could have a podcast where you actually give your opinions on Poch's current decisions. Evaluate Poch's players and games. Evaluate the tactics. Right now, you both just default to Pochettino knows what he's doing and anyone who criticizes doesn't know ball. What a waste of a show if this is all you have to say.
Well, I have a lot to say on this, and I actually responded to this person. Okay. I also gave a long response. I don't know if you see it there. But I mean, I'm going to get lost in how much I need to say about this. I'll start with the following. With respect to why it seems like I give Pochettino a pass and Bruce Arena and Berhalter not a pass. By the way, I gave Klinsmann a huge pass also. Okay. I think he's way above those other two American guys too. This might sound arrogant, but it's my truth, and you guys just have to deal with it. When you have deep expertise, if I may, in a particular domain, that is when you start being capable of discerning what is fact from fiction in the real world. That is when you can start assessing who knows what they're talking about, who barely knows what they're talking about, who doesn't know shit about what they're talking about. And I'm not strictly speaking about fans or spectators or media. I'm talking about being able to discern practitioners. So for instance, if I were to go to a doctor, right? Or if I were to go to a medical conference, let's say, and there's a whole bunch of speakers, physicians speaking on whatever subject, I have no capacity to discern Dr. Smith, he's here, right? And Dr. Wynn is right here. And Dr. Rogers is, holy shit, you're a preeminent world-class, wow, right? There's no way. For me, a doctor's a doctor. I have some sort of signals that I try to rely on to do my best, but the reality is I'm not qualified. I can't do it. I'm not an expert in that field. I'm not immersed in medicine. And the same thing goes for all the professions and all the domains. So let me circle back around to soccer. I've been in this so goddamn long. since I was a child, since my first memories are about all this, and studied tens of thousands of hours of this stuff, but not just studied, and it's not just theory, in practice too. I played, I coached, I've seen all the levels, cycle after cycle after cycle. I've represented professional players. I've started companies in this space, on and on and on. So when I see Pochettino and when I see Bruce Arena, I can discern, almost it's obvious, it's like a fucking supernova in the sky, what the glaring difference, the just, it's outrageously different. Here's when people say, oh, well, how do you know, Gary? Just teach us. How do you know that, right? What is it you see? I can't. This is what people don't understand. I can't do it. It's pattern recognition. There is no one thing that you can pinpoint. It's just you listen to the guys talk, and you just know from their when they talk, you know, that's an expert, that's a mediocre, that guy's a charlatan. You just know it. So if I were to ask a doctor friend of mine, let's say he's brilliant enough to discern a world-class physician from a mediocre, oh my God, don't go there, he's going to kill your mom, okay? If I ask my friend, hey, how do you know? Like, literally, look, this other guy that you're saying is trash wrote all these research articles. He's been a doctor for 25 years, blah, 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 blah. He can't tell me how he knows that that guy's dangerous. So I don't know how to answer this person's question, okay? With respect to the other topics, what else did he say? He said something about, oh, why don't you talk? Oh, this is what I wanted to say, Benny. He wants to talk about, why don't you guys talk about the tactics, right? Or these sorts of things. Dumb, so dumb, so dumb. It's, where do I even begin, Benny? I'll say this. In press conferences of the top managers, I'm trying to make it relatable. How often do you hear top professional managers in the world sit down and give you tactical analysis? Almost never, never, never. You want to know why? Because it's nonsense. All that tactical breakdown stuff that you read online or hear the talking heads talk about online, or it's all bullshit. All of it. Oh, they're in a 4-2-3-1, and then they're in a 4-3-3. And look, this is what Berhalter did. You know, he tucked in the outside back here to gain numerical superiority in the midfield. And, you know, the matchups were such that they were able to play out. It's all post hoc bullshit. They see what happened in the match, and then they invent a tactical story to try to match what they saw. It's horse shit, Ben. It's horse shit. So I don't want to talk about that. That's dumb. And I would be perpetuating the view that somebody who speaks about tactics knows what they're talking about. In fact, when I responded to this guy, that if somebody's talking about tactics and tactical breakdown and systems and all this stuff, that is a huge red flag that guy's a bullshitter. That guy doesn't know what the hell he's saying. Nonsense. But I know it sells. It makes you sound smart.
Yeah, and correct me if I'm wrong here. If you want to do sincerely detailed, thorough analysis, watching the game one time is probably not enough, right? So if anybody just finished the game, they come on, they talk about, hey, this play, or like you just said, they tucked in the winger to create the numeric advantage in the middle, right? Like, I know you've told me in the past, you used to go back and pause the game and rewind it like hundreds of times, right? Just to see every single little movement. And these guys are coming out right after the game. Oh, look at how they started in 3-5-2 today. It's like, come on, guys. Like, you need to actually go in and investigate and watch the game.
It's the dumbest in the world, Ben.
Yep.
Dumbest in the world. And with respect, he's like, oh, do player evaluations or something to that effect. Okay, we've done player evaluations in the past. It's not like we've neglected them. We've talked about players and, you know, their profiles and attributes and why I think this guy's good and this guy's bad and how this guy do or whatever. But I don't linger on that, and not because I don't care about that, Benny. I also think it's dumb. I also think it's a popcorn bubblegum entertainment content is doing that sort of stuff. I am not here for entertainment. I don't care. I'm not here for entertainment. I'm not trying to build a show that is for entertainment purposes. Some people might be entertained and fine by me. Okay. That's not what I'm here for. I'm not even here for soccer. How many times, so this gentleman in particular who says he's listened to so many shows of ours, how many times have I told you on these episodes, Benny, that I actually don't care about soccer? I don't care. Soccer, football, is just a proxy, like it is for pretty much everybody else around the world, for the expression of my cultural, political, economic, and social values. That it's what it's for. So I am using the game of soccer, I'm using the platform to express those fundamental values that I have. So I talk about things like meritocracy, right? I talk about things like, what is the MLS business model? What is the youth soccer business model? Why are they those business models? What are the incentives in the structure? What is human development all about? Whether it be youth, or whether it be an adult who's a coach, or whether it be a businessman in the space, right? Why do I bring up Elon Musk and entrepreneurship and rocket science and all these sorts of things? Because it's an expression of my values, Ben. So when this guy, it sounds like, and I hate to be presumptive, but he was pretty thorough in his comment. When somebody like this brings up soccer specific things, oh, you guys are a soccer show, you should talk about tactics, you should. No, you've missed the whole point of 343. That's not what I am. That's not what we represent. That's not what we care about. And I'm a firm believer that if we, right, teach a man to fish instead of giving him a fish, right? I view it the same way. If I tell you Tim Weah is good, Rodon is bad, these are the reasons why, the coach A is good, coach B is bad, these are the reasons why, and it's all soccer specific, right, by the way, or this is what a 4-3-3 is, 4-2-3-1, this is why you should play three in the back versus four in the back, when should you bunker and counter, when should you play, if I do all that sort of stuff, it's kind of like I'm giving you a fish versus teaching you how to fish. Like if you're a coach and you want to be the best freaking coach in the world that you can possibly be, you have to have your foundational cultural value system right. Okay. And then the rest comes along for the ride. You will get the soccer specific things correctly on your own, right? With good resources. If your foundation of social, political, economic, cultural components are good. That's what I care about, Ben. I don't know if I beat this dead horse or what.
No, you're good. Let me ask you a question that maybe some people might be thinking. So you say, Gary, you don't care about soccer. Soccer is a proxy, right? You don't care about the tactics. If that's the case, then why have you spent so much time into developing a coaching education platform, which covers building out of the back and possession, how to train your team?
Yeah. So first off, by popular demand, when we went viral with our first ever YouTube video, got over 1 million views, like, whoa, what the fuck, Gary? How are you guys teaching the kids to play this way? This is crazy, you know? And I'm like, I don't know. How can I possibly teach you how to coach? That's crazy talk. But people kept pounding me. So I'm like, okay, fuck it. I'll try. You know, I've never done something like this before. I tried. I launched it. People loved it. People got amazing results utilizing the methodology, becoming great coaches themselves. Many of them got to the highest youth levels in the land. And many of them even became professional soccer coaches themselves. So it looks like it's a service that people definitely value, you know, and it was helpful for them. And secondly, more recently, the way I view it, Ben, is that it's so that I don't have to do that type of education on a weekly podcast over and over again. I built the thing. You want to go over there and learn your soccer specific stuff.
Got it. All right. Let's show some love to Jarhead Jr. This guy's always commenting. I'm literally driving 2 hours to a tournament that I didn't realize is only a friendly. No scores taken. They still charge teams hundreds to enter. Youth soccer is a scam. Jarhead Jr., thanks for commenting while you're driving. Make sure to drive safe, my friend. Any comments to his? It's fun comment there, Gary.
Well, we've addressed this. You know, the incentives in the system are such that youth soccer organizations have to operate a certain way to make a certain amount of revenue so that they can survive. And this is what you get when the incentives in the system are, there is no promotion relegation at the pro level. So you can't start a professional team and earn your way up and down the ladder. So that in turn forces the vast majority of quote unquote clubs in our country to be youth only clubs with no adult team, no nothing, because that There's no revenue generation capability at all. And so since you're a youth only club, what, and that's not developing for your own first team, what are the incentives for that business to survive and operate? Where are you going to get your revenue from? Well, you're going to get it from the parents. And so that's the business model. Okay, how do we maximize that business model? Well, you got several ways of doing it. You get bigger and bigger and bigger, right? More teams, more teams, more teams, which means more parents, more parents, more parents, more money, more money, more money. And then that has a consequence that there's less space for the teams to train on because your facilities, you know, aren't going to expand at the same sort of rate, which hurts development of the player. And then now your parent is the customer. So you have to satisfy the parent one way or another. And one way, let's be sincere about this. A lot of parents complain about the tournaments because I'm bringing it back to Jarhead's comment here. But the parents kind of like the tournaments. They kind of like getting away. You know, they had a five-day work week and come the weekend, they can go away somewhere, even if it's 2 hours away, 3 hours away. They get a hotel, you know, chill, get drunk, you know, with the other parents, talk shit, go to their kids' game, enjoy the sun a little bit. They kind of like it. And they like it even more if the team wins. So now there's the incentive to win and the pressure for the coach to win. So if you win and you go to these tournaments, parents have a blast.
Sure. Sadly for Jarhead's parents, there'll be no winning this weekend because I guess they're not keeping scores. So yes, they'll get their entertainment at the hotel bar or something. Gary. All right, Mr. Straight Catnip. Great name, sir. He says, ultimately, all sports are just a distraction to keep people from focusing on the real problems in our society. Do you believe that, Gary?
That's only half the story. Only half the story. The other half of the story is that sports are a proxy for power, for the people in power. They're a proxy to move the masses and indoctrinate the masses in a certain way, in a certain set of values. And if you keep diving down that rabbit hole, why is it that you want to own a sports franchise? So if you're new here, or if you're not new here, I apologize for repetition. Here in the United States, generally speaking, but more so here, you want to own a professional soccer team or professional sports team, NFL, baseball, whatever it is, because you have to, if you're very wealthy, you have to park your money somewhere. These people don't keep money in Bank of America in fiat currencies, okay? Because the dollar depreciates over time. They keep printing dollars. So the more dollars that are printed, the less value each dollar is worth. And so if you just park $1 billion somewhere, that decays 7% a year, 5% a year, 9% a year, depends on the inflation, the real inflation rate. So how do you protect yourself? You buy up hard assets. What's a hard asset? Oh, maybe gold is a hard asset. Maybe real estate is a hard asset, but not just any real estate, prime real estate that you can't just make more of. So you go to Manhattan. They can't make more of Manhattan real estate. You go to Miami Beach. Okay, you go to all these prime real estate locations and you buy the real estate not to live in it. They're empty, okay? But you park your money there because the asset will keep up with inflation and might, it doesn't beat inflation, but at least it'll keep up with inflation. You're not deteriorating your wealth. And so the other prime asset, aside from art pieces, is buying a professional sports team, because a professional sports team are limited in supply. And especially in the United States, where you don't have promotion and relegation, they are outrageously limited in supply. And so the asset appreciates and beats the S&P 500. It beats real estate. It beats art. It beats all these other places to park your money. So that's why they do it. I just have to repeat that over and over and over again because people need to understand what this business actually is about. So sports is just being a distraction, you know, from real world problems. That's just half the story, if it's even half. There's so much more underneath the hood.
Yeah. Crumb Blemmy, he says, I appreciate Gary's economic lessons. I appreciate it too, man. All right,
cool.
Let's shout out Shaber Shinobi. This guy comments on all of our episodes. Love this guy. Not really a question, but he says, you refer to the 3-4-3 model as framework, quote unquote framework. It's not the IKEA of coaching with all the details.
Yeah, this is very true. Again, going back to the philosophy of teach a man to fish and not giving him a fish. So yes, you do see specific activities and drills, and you do see Brian mic'd up executing all these activities and drills with the actual players in the actual competitive environment. It's not scripted. It's none of these sorts of things. So you see him in his element, and you see the players in their own element, right? But you do see this stuff, but it's not a cookie cutter. Okay, first you do this, then you do that, and then you do the other thing. It's not a lesson plan. It's not a recipe. We give you all the building blocks, how to build out of the back, how to transition into the midfield, how to transition into the attack. And then on the defensive side, how to press, you know, how to do all these sorts of things. But then I give you the Lego blocks, then you assemble the Lego blocks according to your own environment that you've got. But yeah, good comment, Cyber.
All right, great. Again, with Crumb Blemmy, he says, we have a lack of players in the USMNT roster that can advance the ball through the middle of the field. What value do you see in Yunus Musa or another player in the pool to address this deficiency?
Yeah, I'm. It's a good comment. I'm going to tell you my initial reaction to this phrase here, that a player that can advance the ball through the middle of the field. I'm presuming you mean dribbling. Getting the ball and just charging forward. First off, yes, Yunus Musa is very good at that. This is true. Would he be an asset in that regard? I think so, yes. Who's playing in those sorts of roles now? Well, you got McKinney, presumably. Well, Tyler Adams plays more the six, I understand. You got Johnny Cardoso. You got Jesus the Roldans, right? You got the Berhalters. You got all these guys who are like tidy players that just do more link-up play versus disrupting the opposition team by charging forward. The only other one is like Gio Reyna. Gio Reyna does get the ball on the turn and then just starts diving up the heart of the defense. So I think that might be a reason why, even though Gio isn't playing any club minutes, he doesn't play. He doesn't play, Benny. He didn't play at Dortmund when he got there, really. He didn't play at Nottingham Forest. He doesn't play when he went back to Dortmund. And now he doesn't play at Mönchengladbach, but Pochettino still calls him. Why? Because he sees maybe this potential attribute that this gentleman who left the comment sees. So Gio and Musa are probably the key guys who can do that. What else can Musa do? I mean, he's an all-around decent player that could be on the national team, but there's nothing particularly striking about him. And I know there's a lot in the fan base that say, Pochettino's an idiot, Musa should be there, it shouldn't be these other guys. And okay, everybody has their opinions, but I don't think it's clear as day.
Got it. All right, Gary, let's keep moving. There's a lot more comments that came in. You're going to like this one. Alex D3G. Gary made me realize how gay MLSers really is.
He's no competition.
No competition, no sacrifices, all a Mickey Mouse Cup. It's soft AF. And then we wonder how we end up with players like Pulisic who feel entitled and have no fight in them when they have to solve problems on their own, when they have to carry the team and put the team on their shoulders.
Is there a question there? I don't know.
I guess more of a statement, but to Alex, I think you are not the only one that Gary has made you realize, because Gary, I think you've opened a lot of eyes as to what MLS truly is. It's not real competition. It's a form of entertainment, basically.
Yeah. Great. Do a little fireworks show, do a freaking Hello Kitty giveaway, you know, at LAFC. Do, I don't know, all these silly little promos. Yeah, keep the masses distracted, keep them entertained, and it's no wonder that their primary customer are folks that are not like us, Benny.
Yep. All right. Fiber with a great question again. He says, I've asked before, but how do you overcome the logistical challenges of doing promotion relegation in a country as large as the USA? What is the incentive that produces soccer density in the country?
Well, I don't agree with the premise as to the logistical challenges. What logistical challenges? MLS already travels all over the country. The first division already travels all over the country, logs all these sorts of miles, and the show goes on. It's fine. Okay. China's a big country, Russia's a big country, you know, Brazil is a big country. Yes, there's a higher density in Brazil. I understand so many clubs are in a very tight-knit region, but I don't think this is an obstacle. Now, if you're talking about regionalizing maybe the second division or the third and the third division, the fourth division, yeah, I agree with you. What's the issue? What's a logistical challenge? Like, USL Championship already has two quote-unquote like divisions, right? There's one half over here and the other half is over here on this side of the country. East and West, I think, is how maybe they partitioned it. Fine, just do that. What's the issue? I don't see an issue, man. So if you've got two divisions, let's say East and West in the second division, fine. The winner of the East moves up to Division One. The winner of the West moves up to Division One. Or if you want to have a little playoff after the full season between East and West, the top four teams or whatever, and then the top two of those get promoted, great. And if you want to regionalize it into quarters for Division Three, fine, do that. I just reject the premise, you know, with all respect. And then it says, what was the second part? What is the incentive or something like that?
What is the incentive that produces soccer density in the country?
Well, the incentive is opportunity. The investors all over the place, people who want to own professional sports team are like, fuck it. Okay. Yeah. I'm going to start a club in the fourth division of the United States or in the third division of the United States. I'm just going to start it because I have opportunity. That there's your density. So however many teams we have now in the fourth tier and the third tier will double or triple or quadruple because of opportunity. Now you've got the density to regionalize. And the logistics handle themselves.
Got it. All right, great. Let's go to a coaching question here. OZ Chicas, 2870. I'm currently integrating 3-4-3 positional play, corporate technical work, and tactical periodization. In your experience, how do you determine how much tactical detail to give players?
I have to presume a lot of things with this question because I don't know what they mean by tactics and tactical details. Look, so they're in the 3-4-3 program. Do I have that right? Because if you go in the 3-4-3 program in phase one, which is year one of the program, the tactical side of the equation is, hey, here's how to build out of the back. You know, and we show you the exercises of how to build out of the back and then how to transition from there to the midfield and then how to transition into attacking patterns. So that's the extent of tactical details. It's not much more than that. You train the outside back. Hey, when the center back is facing you and it's going to come to you, you should be backpedaling to the sideline. When, you know, the center back launches the ball forward, you all step. You know, when the six pivots and is pointing towards you guys, you all backpedal. Like, these are the tactical details. It's not that complicated and it's not that much. So if you want to go further than that, I think that's where coaches start making a mistake when they want to go into detail, because maybe they saw something online and I don't know. I guess I don't understand the question. Benny, maybe you can help.
Well, maybe in the comments you can add more context and that will help us out a little bit. But let's move on to another one, Gary. The comments are flying in now. And again, guys, I just want to say 33 of you, there's been about 40 people on here. Thank you guys for joining us on spending your Friday evening with 3-4-3. Really appreciate it. Cross of Sports. Is 3-4-3 going to update their content on the website? I do like the fundamentals that were in the curriculum, but I can imagine a tweak or update on formula can be added, unless if it's not broken.
It ain't broken. That's why there's nothing to fix. I appreciate the question, and it's not the first time I get it. And I think it's almost like a virus. There's like this little bug that people have generally, and I know I get it too, where you think things have to be like modernized, right? Or things, because things change, right? And yeah, things change, but fundamental principles do not change. I'm big into space exploration. I'm big into rockets because, you know, I'm a trained physicist. I'm an engineer. I follow all that stuff intimately. Rocket science is rocket science. A rocket engine, there's fundamental things that you follow. And then when you're talking about launching a rocket into space, there's the rocket equation and follow the rocket equation, right? Or if you want to talk about forces, you know, in the universe, maybe you start with F equals MA, right? And it's immutable. You don't change it. This is when I let go of this thing, Benny, what's going to happen to this thing? It's going to fall 100% of the time. How is it going to fall? It's going to fall the same way every single time. It's a foundational fundamental principle. So when it comes to the 3-4-3 coaching methodology, we focus on the fundamental principles of the game. That does not change. How do you receive a ball? How do you pass a ball? How do you train building out of the back? Or what is building out of the back? And why is it important? Like these are immutable facts. So there's nothing really to spruce up. You want me to change the web design? Maybe. But not the other guys, not the other stuff. And if I'm wrong in the event that you don't agree with me, okay, that's cool. I accept it.
Yeah. Somebody also said, how can we update the 3-4-3 website to be more modern and easy to navigate?
I'll take your suggestion. If you have specific suggestions, you know, feel free to email me, guys, or DM me or whatever. I'll take a look at it. You know, it's not perfect. I'm not saying it's perfect, but insofar as the material itself, the framework itself, look, it's not perfect, but there's nothing egregious there that needs to be updated at all.
Yeah. And I'm not sure the context in which this guy's commenting, but I'm not sure if he's maybe just a first year member. So he doesn't know that there's other phases that are going to be coming into this.
Mm-hmm. Okay. That's a good point, Benny. That's a good point. So, new evolution to the frame, not evolution of the framework. Look, the philosophy is this: start with the basics, the foundational principles, the core. You should do that with your players and your team for an entire year. You should not move on to anything else. You have to really drill that deep into their psyche, into their muscle memory. And then once they really got it, then you can start layering in some complexities to the game, which is what year two gives you. And then you can layer more, right? Which is what year three gives you. And then you can layer even more, which is what year four gives you. So by the time you get to like year five, you have all the layers of the cake. So you're right, Benny. Maybe that was the context.
Yeah. Here's an awesome comment, Gary. CryptoFish. Been a member for about 10 years now. Great content. Just trust the process and stick to what the program teaches. Repetition is key.
So bro, you gotta send CryptoFish a t-shirt, man. 10-year member.
That's insane.
No, we got quite a number of OGs, man, that are still at it. They keep in touch, and it's freaking awesome. And by the way, for all you OGs, there's new things coming. There's new things in the pipeline. I'm very excited about it. Stay tuned. All I'll say is that I'm integrating AI into things, and AI will eventually get integrated into the program. And basically what I've been working on, there's a decent prototype, but it's not quite ready for you guys yet. I don't want to embarrass myself unless you're like, hey, it's okay, Gary, we'll understand. We're basically training an agent on all our content. Everything, it's ingested every thousands of hours of content, thousands of articles, all the stuff in the program. And so you'll be able to interface it with it just like you do in your traditional LLMs, whether it be Gemini, whether it be ChatGPT, whether it be Claude, whether it be Grok, whatever. And it will respond to you as if it's me or Brian, basically, you know, or if you need some quick answers, you know, hey, where's the 4v4 plus 3 thing? And, you know, it'll send you the link to something like this. This is the vision, okay, to make things a lot more efficient and more valuable.
All right, Gary, let's end with, let's do two more questions. Yeah.
Is this thing recording? We better be recording this thing.
It does record. And also, this is our first time ever doing this, but I'm pretty sure once we end the stream, you can go back and watch it on YouTube anytime.
Okay. Okay.
Back with, let's see, Kaju Sports Club. And I see players who don't dribble forward, but pass through multiple layers of defense aren't in demand. But players who have the opposite skill profile get better opportunities. Thoughts?
Read it one more time, Benny. I'm sorry. In my opinion, what? I see players
who don't dribble forward, but pass through multiple layers of defense aren't in demand. But players who have the opposite skill profile get better opportunities.
What's the opposite skill profile? That meaning that they do dribble forward?
I'm assuming.
Is that true? I don't know. I don't know whether I agree that's true or not. Is that at the youth level maybe? I don't know. I don't know how to answer this.
Okay. He's putting some more comments for context. Okay. Let's go with Fidel Gonzalez, another longtime supporter. USSF doesn't have the integrity nor guts to utilize the existing national and regional leagues to create a relatively solid pyramid, which spans MLS, USL, NPSL, UPSL, and others. So do they have the integrity or guts, Gary? This guy says no. Fidel says no.
Well, they don't have the integrity because they're corrupt. They are completely controlled by the monopoly, which is MLS. So, and this is another thing that MLS loves, is for all the fans and the media to be putting blame on the Federation. The Federation sucks, the Federation this, the Federation that, the Federation shouldn't hire Pochettino, the Federation should be calling up these MLS players, the Federation. MLS loves that because it leaves the blame off of them. What folks need to understand is that the Federation is controlled corruptly by MLS. So if you're asking about integrating these other leagues into a unified pyramid, which is what we've been fighting for forever. I mean, that is what needs to happen. I mean, if you leave it up to the powers that be right now, that ain't going to happen because MLS doesn't want it to happen. I guess my bottom line is stop blaming the Federation. They're a puppet. You need to blame Major League Soccer and you need to educate everybody in your circles that that is the issue, not the Federation.
Yeah. A quick follow-up, Gary, Casa Sports, he or she was a first-year member. So now they know they'll be getting the next phase. All right, Gary, let's get technical. And I think we've actually addressed this maybe two episodes ago, but let's see what you have to say. Language learning models usage in soccer coaching. Do you have a trusted model that is better for the coaching world?
Yeah, we did record an episode on this. This is from Cyber again, right? We did record an episode on this. We just haven't released it yet. But I'll answer it here too. First off, I don't use the language models for soccer. Like I said earlier in the episode, I don't give a shit about soccer. I'm not wasting my time on soccer related things. It's use case. So this is what I generally think about AI as it currently stands. I like Balaji Srinivasan's mental model framework for how to think about LLMs. He says they're great from middle to middle, meaning at the beginning of the pipe is the human being and at the end of the pipe is a human being. So the beginning of the pipe is a prompt from a human being, then the LLM is amazing, right? And gives an output. And then you have to validate that output. Now, how good is the LLM? Depends on how good the human is. If you are an expert in a field, it's an incredible tool, okay? Because you can validate and you know how to prompt, you know the vocabulary, you know the terminology, you know how to, you know all the contexts in the world. If you're not an expert in a domain, it's still helpful, but you're flying blind. You don't know whether it's hallucinating. You don't know whether the answers are good or not good for your particular context or what you actually wanted. It's very challenging, okay? So it's very easy for somebody who's not an expert in a field to go down a spiral of misinformation and be misled. So the same applies for soccer. Which models do I trust? I don't know. I've used them all. It's just the pace of innovation accelerates so quickly that they both one-up each other constantly. And so I can't give a definitive answer. My current go-to is usually Claude, okay? I just go to Anthropic's models because they seem to be extremely good at coding and extremely good at technical side of things, which is what I spent most of my time on. For general purpose things, I like Grok because, and look, you might think I'm an idiot, whatever. We're all idiots in many respects, including me. I trust Elon when it comes to AI. I don't want to be pushed in one direction or another direction for other alternative agendas. And I trust that Grok's LLM, when I'm asking non-technical based things, is more solid than otherwise. I don't know if I answered his question or not, Ben.
I think you did, Gary. All right, here's the context for the last question that we were talking about, Gary. Even in Europe, players like Alex Mendes and Kobe Hernandez-Foster get the ball down the field faster, but guys like Musa and McKennie get opportunities, not just USA players.
Oh, no, this is just, this is so deep. This is so deep. It's kind of like saying, Gary, you know, how do I become a great coach? Like, why is this a great coach and this is not a great, this subject matter as to what players make it and don't make it is outrageously multifaceted. And I don't think a good framework for judging what's happening is to look at data points like this, because at the pro level, there's other factors in play. Look, I'll keep it specific. Okay. McKennie and Musa, their physical attributes are, you know, relative to what, who did he say? You mentioned Alex, right? Alex and Kobe, their physical attributes are off the scales compared to Alex and Kobe. Okay. So when you don't have the physical attributes that are top tier, your other attributes have to be off the charts, you know, for a coach, a modern day coach, a modern day club to say, you are so goddamn good technically and from a soccer IQ perspective that I don't care. I've got the physical guy over here and the mental monster over here. I need you. So it's true. It's not just me saying it. Most of the technical guys have been disappearing from football. The number 10s have been disappearing from football. The Riquelmes don't exist anymore. The Iniestas don't really exist anymore. The Pirlos don't really exist anymore. So they've been faded out. Will they make a comeback? I think so, but you know, it's a bad era.
Yeah. And actually, Gary, Cyber commented, leading up to the last World Cup, Brian did a breakdown of the U21 USMNT roster. Why have so many of those players fallen off the radar? I think it's kind of for the reason that you just described, Gary. Like, I think most of the players that he was describing is a player profile that is getting overlooked in U.S. soccer.
Yeah, no, and also it's very common. See, there's like this survivorship bias that people are very susceptible to. They only see the successes mostly for obvious reasons. They're the ones in the media. They're the ones getting opportunities. They're the ones on television, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And they look at the backstory of those guys and they look at the trajectory and then they draw conclusions. They don't realize that basically 9 out of 10 guys who were like in youth World Cups or youth national teams or more than 9 out of 10 end up not making it. They fade out. They're gone. So it's a combination of the technical players disappearing, Benny. Sure. Because if Brian did a roster breakdown, I'm sure he said that he liked certain types of players, which are technical soccer IQ players and not other players. And maybe those players didn't make it. But it's very important to appreciate that most top tier youth players do not make it as pros. It's just a fact across the world.
Yeah. All right, Gary, let's end with this. It's not a question, but it's just a statement. There was a guy that asked you the question about Mendes and Kobe. He was a member for 9 years that revolutionized his coaching. 343 blog and podcasts revolutionized my understanding of the sports ecosystem. And here's the big one that I like the most. Ruined watching most of the other people.
Oh, it ruins you, Ben. It absolutely ruins you. I'm ruined forever. I think what ruined me forever, Benny, was Pep Guardiola's Barcelona, to be sincere, right? I'd been getting blackpilled, you know, over the course of my youth and early adulthood because of how much I studied the game and how much I think I started to see and appreciate. And then I saw American soccer and whatever. But Pep really effed me because during the glory years of Barcelona, that football was so out of this world and stratospheric and elegant and beautiful. List out all the adjectives in the dictionary about that team. That ruined Argentinian soccer for me. It ruined Italian soccer for me. It ruined every other soccer for me. I could not watch anything else. I couldn't. If I watched anything else, it's like nails on a chalkboard. I think everything's shocking now. That, because that is the standard, right? You compare everything to that. And everything compared to that is terrible football. You watch Manchester City, where Pep Guardiola is currently and has been there for, I don't know, has it been like 8 years? Or he's been forever, 9 years there, something like this. You watch Manchester City and you see that Pep is trying to play like that, but it's not the same. I don't feel compelled in any way, shape, or form. Oh, what time does Man City play this weekend? Oh, I got to tune in. I don't even do it all the time for Champions League, Benny. Oh, Man City's going to play. They play the style of play that I don't get out of bed for it. So I am ruined. I'm just like this guy. I am ruined. And unfortunately, I guess I'm ruining other people through the framework.
Yeah. Nobody used to be like that, Gary, to where you would look at Barca's schedule, look at when they're playing, and no matter what's happening that day, you're watching that game, bro. Like, bro, my dad would even pull us out of school to come home and come watch Barca games, right? Because that's how much we loved it, bro.
Yeah, man.
Not the same.
And it's not just me or whoever sent us this comment, and thank you, by the way, where football has been ruined. You've seen the past couple of years, the criticism of Pep by other managers or pundits or whatever, saying that Pep ruined football, or players even. He said Pep ruined football because it used to, right? Because they're coming at it from an angle. It used to be more individual oriented. Yeah, more quote unquote creativity all over the field, more improvisation all over the field, more elements of surprise all over the field. Oh, wow, amazing, or something like this. But when Pep came on the scene, he structured it so much that the team became such a focus that the individual lost the individual is not center stage anymore. The team is center stage. And so people think that ruined soccer in many respects. I understand the view, but I also look at Pep's Barcelona and I'm like, he had both the team center stage and the individuals were center stage too.
Yeah, 100%. I miss those days, dude.
Yeah, when I said earlier, I don't care about football. Honestly, some of has to do with that doesn't exist anymore. That gold standard, that amazingness is gone. So I don't care. And Messi is already aged out. And let's admit it. He's aged out. He's not the same.
Yeah.
I don't tune into Inter Miami games because Messi's going to play. I don't tune in. Okay. Once in a while, maybe, but it's Messi. You would think, oh, I'm going to tune in. I don't tune in. I don't care. It's not spectacular.
Yeah.
He's gone. And it's a retirement league.
Yeah. But would you say, Gary, the game has evolved in many ways? And for me, I think the team that's right now is closest, obviously nowhere near the level, but the team that I enjoy watching today is PSG. Like, they still have some sense of touching the ball around, possession, but then they're going to be just fucking dangerous in the final third, dude. And they just, their creativity, they're moving up the ball. To me, like, that's close to, not the same, but still close.
You're right. No, you're right. You're right. I think that is the closest. Yeah. I still don't really tune in.
Well, you'll be tuning in for the World Cup, though, no?
Yeah. It has a different aura to it. It's just for sure. Different stakes are on the line. It's country versus country. And to tie this all up in a nice little bow where I say I care about the social, political, economic, and cultural values, and soccer is the way I express those things. There's nothing better than country versus country, nation versus nation, tribe versus tribe, than the World Cup.
True.
Club versus club. Yeah, there's some of that for sure, but it's just not the same, man.
Yeah. Really quick, Gary, we'll end it with this. I put on 343's Instagram. Anybody wanted to put any questions or comments for the show? So let's end with this one. Who's winning the World Cup, Gary? Putting you on the spot right now. And hey, in the chat, guys, let us know who you think is going to win the World Cup. I'd be curious to see what everybody's thinking. I'm going with Spain, bro. That's me.
Well, yeah, my head was bobbing back and forth between Spain and France. I'm going to go with something remarkable. France makes a third World Cup final in a row and wins. That's what I'm going with.
Okay. I like it. We got Spain or France, Spain.
Argentina. Gary, Argentina's getting eliminated second round.
Hey, but you know, Gary, you always tell me, right? You always, during the World Cup, you bet on the USMNT to win? You bet money, right?
Not always. I did last World Cup because Berhalter was at the helm and the whole thing's a dumpster fire and the whole thing's an MLS platform showcase. It's being used and it's corrupt and I hate it. And I'm like, I want these fuckers to lose. And if they lose, it advances our agenda, or I should say my agenda. And so if they lose, I'm happy. And if they win, fuck, I don't want to be unhappy. So I'm going to put some money on them to win. So it's a nice little consolation prize. If they win, fuck it. I made some money, but I don't know what I'm going to do this World Cup quite yet.
Yeah. What do you hope to see from the USMNT in this World Cup area? What do you think would be the best outcome?
A quarterfinal. I don't want them to do too good where MLS gets to create this narrative that everything is amazing. You know, we're on the right path. Let's keep trusting the process and have all its media Muppets perpetuate that. And then the fan base perpetuate that. So it can't be better than a quarterfinal. If it's less than a quarterfinal, it's like, see the big bad foreigner. We told you, Pochettino's a fraud, disaster. We should always have an American coach. We shouldn't be relying on these people who don't care about the U.S. men's national team. They're always thinking about their next gig, you know, in Europe or something like that. And so guess what that enables the monopoly to do? Get one of their lapdogs to further their monopoly agenda with the biggest platform in American soccer. Get some stupid ass MLS coach in there who knows fuck all and is going to obey the monopoly. So we can't have less than a quarterfinal. So I'm landing straight on a quarterfinal because then it's kind of like you can have both narratives battling it out for cultural dominance.
Got it. The viewers want to know here, if it's USMNT versus Argentina.
Argentina. The fuck are we talking Argentina? What the fuck are we talking about? And I was born and raised in the United States.
That should tell you everything right there.
So when people talk, I know we need to cut this off. How long have we been going? Like an hour and a half or something. When people talk about the dual nationals, right? And they make up all these stupid stories about the dual nationals and, oh, if they go to Mexico, F them, screw them. I'm not sure many appreciate that those of us who are first generation, you know, our parents immigrated over here. We were born and raised here. Maybe we have dual passport, dual nationalities. It's not that our heart is in the country where our parents came from. I don't feel attached to Argentina that way. Okay. It's more so that we don't feel welcomed by the U.S. soccer system and ecosystem and the monopoly. We are treated like trash here. They don't want us around. Because the way we comport ourselves, the way we express ourselves, we're not robots. We're passionate people. We speak our minds. We have loose tongues. And just if we see this is the truth, high likelihood we're just going to spit out the truth. And what they like here is people who are muzzled, who will shut the F up. And if you aren't one of those and you aren't willing to comply with that, they F you off. So we don't feel embraced here, Benny. So I understand, and I've had a lot of players under my tutelage who were judging, should I go to Mexico or should I go to the United States? Close to a dozen players who had that dilemma or issue. And I understand where they're coming from and these other guys, where they're coming from. It's like, hey, do I play for the US, but I don't really feel attached because I'm treated like trash? Or do I play for Mexico or these other countries where I don't really feel it, but at least I'm not treated like trash and I feel a little bit more wanted. So Argentina versus US, Argentina all the fucking way. And you know what they're going to say? Oh, Pochettino let them win.
Well, I'll be going for Mexico in the World Cup.
Hey, by the way, that's what they did. That's what the Mexican fan base and media and everybody did against Tata Martino. Tata Martino had to play against Argentina, right? And in the last World Cup. And Mexico lost. And then everybody said, it's because Tata Martino's Argentinian. He just kind of like didn't do what he had to do. So dumb.
Crazy. Well, first of all, to the audience, I want to say thank you guys. I think we need to do this more often. And whatever you guys need, hit us up. Email us, put it in the comments. We love interacting and hearing from you guys, and I think it helps spark the conversation. So anything else you want to say, Gary?
No, now I think they also know that we don't heavily edit our episodes, because you see how we flow with it, and it's going to feel just like any other episode. We don't edit ourselves. I mean, we do a little bit of editing, as you well know, Benny, just to maybe cut the big gaps between our words or cut big pauses. Or if there's something, I don't know, like Benny's talking about something sensitive and personal. Okay, fuck it, we'll wipe that out. But you see us for who we are, man. And I'm very appreciative. I'm surprised. I thought we were just going to get like 5 people showing up.
Brothers, I think at our highest was 35 people. So not too bad. Maybe we can commit to this once a month, Gary. I enjoyed it. Hopefully the fans did as well. All right, everybody. Appreciate you guys. A lot of great comments. You guys are the best.
Signing off. Thanks, Ben. Thanks, everybody.
Well, that's it for today, guys. Thank you for listening. A reminder for coaches. You can get both the free and premium coaching programs at 343coaching.com. Don't let anyone tell you your teams can't win by playing dominant possession-based football while also developing individual players to the highest levels. Nonsense. We've proved it at every single level, and so have hundreds of serious member coaches across the country. Now that we've moved on to the pro level, we're delivering everything we've learned in the program. Don't wait and continue delaying getting on a proven path. And parents, 343masterclass.com is where you want to go to get a working compass for navigating the American soccer landscape with your player. It's pretty bad out there, but let our experience guide you. Lastly, if you're coaching 7v7, we've got you covered there as well. Go to 7v7coaching.com. Until next time, cheers everyone, and keep building.